You are on the line, live on Fox Sports Central Alabama on 98.3 FM in Birmingham and Sylacauga, and in Auburn and Opelika on ESPN 106.7. Listen online at foxsports983.com or espnau.com. You are on the line with Noah Gardner and Levi Fitzwater. Join the show by calling 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
You are on the line with Noah Gardner and Lance Dahl with you on ESPN 106.7 and on Fox Sports Central Alabama. Hope everybody's having a great Thursday afternoon. Noah and Lance here with you from 2 to 4 p.m. Once again on ESPN 106.7 and on Fox Sports Central Alabama. Phone lines are open. We're taking your calls from 2 to 4, 334-321-1390 is the number to call. Once again, call in at 334-321-1390. Find Levi and I and Jaws on Twitter. Levi on Twitter. He's gone today. Levi's out sick. And so we wish him well and hope he gets past all this nasty allergy stuff going on out there. Hopefully this rain can wash some of the pollen away. Find Levi on Twitter, at Levi Fitzwater. Find Jaws on Twitter, at Intern Jaws. And find myself on Twitter, at Point Gardner. Jaws, how you doing today, my man?
Fantastic. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, bud. It's nasty weather out, but we didn't get washed away last night. Hopefully the pollen did, but I'll tell you, I had a hard time sleeping last night. It was a rumbling outside.
Yeah, it was pretty loud out there for the majority of the night. I got up at about 5 to come help with Auburn Opelika this morning here at the studio earlier today, and I didn't realize just how bad the weather was until I stepped outside, and I was like, oh, gosh, oh.
Yeah, you're making the radio rounds, man. It was still raining pretty hard at about 5 o'clock, too, because that was about the time that I was awake. And you yourself waking up, you're making your radio rounds today. I appreciate you joining me on the Line today. Let's start it off, some Auburn football talk here. It looks like Javarius Johnson's drawing some attention here in the spring out of that wide receiver room. Javarius Johnson, last season, played sparingly in the first two games, gets hurt in the Georgia game. And now it's looking like he's drawing some attention from not only the previous coaching staff, but now from this coaching staff. With two primary receivers out due to injury here during the spring, Shedrick Jackson and Xavion Capers both listed as out by Brian Harsin last week. Which receivers do you think will emerge in the spring as playmakers that may very well carry over into the fall into some actual playing time?
Well, I think we talked about this a couple of weeks ago whenever we were doing our receiver room and doing the depth chart preview for this receiver group, and I immediately go to a guy like Malcolm Johnson Jr. I think with Auburn's receiver room right now, they're kind of built more on physicality. It's not a lot of speed at that position. I think a guy like Malcolm Johnson Jr., incredibly fast guy. I think they can get him involved in a lot of different ways in this offense. And I think he's the guy you got to look out for. Outside of Javarius Johnson, you know, I think Malcolm Johnson Jr. is the guy. There are not a whole lot of experienced names in this wide receiver group, and you just got to go with the ones that you know. And we've seen Malcolm Johnson Jr. Perform at a track level as far as his speed goes. So I got to go with Malcolm Johnson Jr.
I think that's a good answer as well. I think Javarius Johnson may very well be the answer to this question, and I wasn't looking necessarily for something outside of Javarius Johnson. I think he very well may end up being my number one answer here for someone who's going to garner playing time. And when we were doing our A-Day depth chart series and examining the wide receiver position, Javarius Johnson was not somebody that I was super high up on, but obviously that was before we got an open practice. That was before coaches and players alike have been talking positively about him. You also look at his track record last season before an injury ended his year last year and really sidelined him for some considerable time after that Georgia game. Johnson must have been liked by the coaching staff if they were getting him on the field in the Georgia game, considering we know how much of a logjam there was at the wide receiver position. That was not a group that was getting rotated out of football games. It was going to be Seth Williams, Anthony Schwartz, Eli Stove. And so for Johnson to get on the field, the previous coaching staff must have very well liked him. Now, you might be saying, well, the previous coaching staff isn't here anymore, so what does that matter? You're right, but it does say something to me that this coaching staff is talking positively about him, that players around him like him, that he is now It's not just the last coaching staff. It's now this coaching staff, too. So for the fact that two coaching staffs have liked this guy and you're seeing him get more and more opportunities, he may be a little bit more of a refined route runner than some of the other guys. He may find a way to get himself on the field in more crucial situations. But I think there's also a logjam at wide receiver this year. And some people may not totally understand what I mean by that, considering three, four guys went on to the pros after this year. But I think that there's a solid group of players that have established themselves at the top of the pecking order. Capers, one of them. Kobe Hudson, another. Shedrick Jackson, I think, is there, but I think he's probably now towards the bottom of it since he's hurt and has missed another spring. When I was talking about the depth chart, that was before we found out that he was out. And now that he's out, I'm like, well, there goes another spring for Shedrick Jackson. That's going to be hard for him to climb back to the top of the depth chart and really show them what he can do. Instead, Elijah Kenyon's healthy and is the guy that you would expect to take that X position in the wide receiver room. So when you're looking at the three wide receivers, I think you're talking about Kenyon, Capers, and Hudson. You're talking about that group right there. And then Shedrick Jackson may get back out there when he's healthy because he does some things that this coaching staff's probably really going to like. He's a good run blocker, great run blocker at wide receiver, super physical, tough guy. This coaching staff's going to like him when they can finally get him out on the football field. So you got those four players right there at wide receiver. After that, you're like, how much rotation is actually going to happen at wide receiver when those are going to be your sure targets, going to Kobe Hudson and Capers, and then Kenyon will get some deep balls thrown his way, and Shedrick Jackson will get some opportunities as well. How deep is this receiver room really going to go? I don't know.
Yeah, I agree with you. I feel like this receiver room, in a year that Auburn doesn't really have a lot of experience, this receiver room feels very top-heavy just based off of their four guys returning. You know, we've talked about this before. It's like, how can you really predict what this receiver room is going to look like when you haven't really seen them on the field? It's like, well, we can only go off the little that we have seen, which is we've seen Kenyon pop off, we've seen Kobe catch some fades, and we've seen Capers catch a couple of passes down to middle, but other than that, that's it. That's all we've seen. So we have only that to go off of, and it seems like, just based off of what we're seeing in spring camp, our assumptions are correct. Those three guys are going to be your top guys, and you mentioned it about Javarius Johnson. He has some incredible route running, according to this coaching staff, and I feel like they can turn him into kind of a Ryan Davis type of role. I feel like that might suit him well. So Auburn's definitely got some potential in this receiver room. Now, how deep is it? I'm not quite sure because there's just not enough experience to be able to gauge a whole lot of these different players' potential.
Which I think leaves the door wide open in the spring, which is why I've asked this question to open up the show. I think it leaves the door wide open for younger guys and guys that don't have experience
right.
to be able to get on the field and show what they can do and possibly usurp somebody that was in front of them, like a Shedrick Jackson, if you know this injury thing lingers or maybe some of the other guys just don't. Like maybe Elijah Kenyon doesn't take the opportunity that's in front of him that everybody in the media seems to think is in front of him right now, because everybody loves them some Elijah Kenyon. But the point that I always like to bring up about it is maybe we should bump the brakes. We only saw him one time in a bowl game. That was it. Is it flash in the pan or is it the real deal? So there is a logjam with a couple of guys that I think are sure guys to play, Kobe Hudson and Xavier Capers, there are maybe some room. There's maybe some room for some guys to get on the field if they show what they can do in the spring.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that another guy that I'm really looking forward to watching during A-Day and just throughout this spring camp is Kobe Hudson. Everybody's talking about him, how he's going to be wide receiver number one. He's probably the most versatile, best player that Auburn has. Whenever I say versatile, I don't necessarily mean he's versatile in all different aspects of the game. I just mean he's good enough to outplay a couple of the other freshman receivers that Auburn has right now. So I'm really interested to see how he performs whenever he's getting targeted consistently, because whenever we saw it last year, we saw him make some impressive catches. We saw him make some really good catches down the sideline against Georgia, and I really think this guy has a lot of potential, but just I want to see him be on the field consistently getting targets and getting receptions, and then I will be able to commit to, like, okay, Kobe Hudson is our go-to guy, and I can feel firm in that prediction.
The other guy that you brought up, because we were talking about outside of primary receivers, which I'm going to go ahead and label Kobe Hudson and Xavier Capers as primary receivers for the sake of this argument, because I think most people would agree those guys are going to be at the top of the depth chart based on the fact that they set themselves apart last season. Now, this coaching staff may not care anything about it, and if someone, if there's a completely different receiving core than what most people are expecting come A-Day and then also into the fall, then this coaching staff's making quite the statement, right? This coaching staff has an opportunity to make statements all over the field. They could, you know, we've seen what's been going on at defensive tackle or nose tackle, that is, in this new three-man front. We've seen what's been going on at nose tackle with Jeremiah Wright climbing the depth chart at the moment to possibly usurp what we all thought would be Tyrone Truesdale's spot. This coaching staff's, you know, by all indications there, if Jeremiah Wright takes the first spot on the depth chart at nose tackle, well, that's a statement from the coaching staff to me that there's no allegiance to former players, there's no allegiance to experience, there's no allegiance to what you think you may be entitled to because you've been in the program for 5 years. Doesn't matter, you got to come out and you got to show it. And I think this coaching staff has shown bits and pieces of that already through the beginning of spring, but still entirely too early. I like that you brought up Malcolm Johnson Jr. His name keeps coming up in conversations with folks. I know we've talked with Jason Caldwell on the show a week or two ago, and Malcolm Johnson Jr.'s name came up with that. People are enamored with this guy's speed right now. He's really the heir to the Anthony Schwartz title of just a super fast guy that can run straight down the field and blow the top off of a defense. We'll see, though, if he sees the field a significant amount. There are several guys who I would put ahead of him, though, in this order. Javarius Johnson is one of them. And once again, I've gone down here. I mean, with Capers, Hudson, Jackson, Canyon, Johnson, Javarius Johnson, that is. I mean, I've just listed five guys right there that I think are ahead of Malcolm Johnson Jr. right now, despite how fast the guy can run. But speed can get you on the field in certain situations. Kind of makes you a gadget guy in some ways. And I feel weird saying that downfield threat might end up being this offense's equivalent of a gadget guy. But if that's the only way he gets onto the field, that kind of makes you that gives you a unique role, which is the definition of a gadget player.
Right. I want to go back to something you mentioned real quick, talking about how this coaching staff has shown bits and pieces of not having allegiance to former players. And I think that's something that this Auburn fan base has not seen in a very long time, because we saw what happened at the running back spot under Gus Malzahn during the Booby Whitlow, Cam Martin years. It's like, well, Cam Martin's the senior running back, so we're going to let him start the game and get the majority of the carries at the beginning of the game. But as the season went on, very quickly, two or three games in, everybody realized, like, oh, Booby Whitlow is the better overall running back. Why are we starting Cam, even though Booby's better? And it's like, well, Malzahn had an allegiance to seniority, and he had allegiance to these players that had been on the roster for so long. I think with this coaching staff, you look at what the receiver room's going through right now, and like you mentioned, it's like they've shown bits and pieces of not really attaching to certain guys. So while we may say that this receiver room is very top heavy and we've only got three or four guys that are really going to see the field consistently, because of these injuries, it opens up opportunities for younger guys like Javarius Johnson and Malcolm Johnson to get onto the field. It's just whoever's the better player should get on the field, period. It doesn't matter how long they've been there.
Some other places that you think we've seen that?
I would probably...
Because nose tackle's there for me. I think offensive line's seen it as well.
I would agree. I think the...
offensive line's wide open right now, I feel like.
Right. I think we've seen it at offensive line. I think we've seen it at defensive line. And I think we've also seen it in secondary. And I think we've seen it maybe a little bit at the quarterback room. And I don't want to get into that controversy too much.
But I don't think we've seen it in the QB room at all.
I'm okay with that. But I think we definitely did see it in the Malzahn regime in two or three different places, not just in the running back room. And I think with a guy like Harsin, he's going to let things be wide open his first year, and I'm really excited about that.
Yes, with Malzahn, I think we did see it. I do think we may have saw favoritism or allegiance to seniority in certain players, despite the fact that they may not have been playing well. Maybe Jeremy Johnson, the fact that he was out there for as long as he was an indication of that, but he did at least pull the plug, you know, three, four games into
that year.
That
was kind of where my mind was going.
But I meant with Harsin, I don't think we've seen that in the quarterback room right now. I don't think there's quarterback controversy. I understand the fact why you said pecking order and not depth chart with the quarterback position at Auburn. I think Bo Nix's job is hammered down. I think it's locked down. I think it's his. He did say that he was at the top of the pecking order at quarterback. Most coaches aren't going to say, or at least a new coach coming in, isn't going to say, yes, without a doubt, this is our starter here. But I think everything's pointing towards him. He is going to be the starter come fall.
Yeah, I agree with you. As far as quarterback controversy goes, I was thinking of those first couple of weeks in 2015 with Jeremy Johnson.
Oh, you were talking about Malzahn.
Right.
Okay.
I was talking about Malzahn. I'm like, oh, just go ahead and pull the plug on Jeremy already.
Sure.
It's obvious that he is not going to be the guy moving forward. But I think we have seen it under Malzahn, and I'm really excited to see what this coaching staff does with Harsin.
On the other side of this break, when we come back, we're going to talk some NBA news, but not what you think. Chuma Okeke definitely benefited today from what the Orlando Magic did at the trade deadline. We'll also talk some other college football news. Stay with us on the line.
You are on the line with Noah Gardner and Levi Fitzwater. We'll be right back.
You're on the line with Noah Gardner and Lance Dahl with you on ESPN 106.7 and on Fox Sports Central Alabama. Keep up with all the content the show is putting out on RadioAlabamaSports.net and on the Radio Alabama Sports Facebook page. Follow it on Twitter as well at Radio AL Sports. Once again, that's RadioAlabamaSports.net. Noah and Jaws with you in the studio. Number to call, 334-321-1390. That'll get you through to On the Line. Once again, 334-321-1390. What Auburn receivers do you think are going to emerge in the spring that are different than what you would have expected outside of that primary receiver group? So some guys that are kind of coming out of nowhere, maybe, isn't the right way to say it, but guys that are emerging in the spring, we want to hear from you. That was our topic of conversation earlier in the show, but now we're going to switch gears here. NBA trade deadline, and typically I wouldn't be talking about this, but this does affect Auburn, at least a former Auburn basketball player, that is. Chuma Okeke shot so well yesterday that the Orlando Magic were like, all right, it's trade deadline, it's time to blow it up.
Yeah, they traded Nikola, and I don't want to butcher his last name, so let's just say he is
Vukovic.
Vukovic.
It's not that hard, Vukovic.
I just didn't want to make a fool of myself. We know my track record with pronouncing things here on the line.
Yeah, the Magic made three major trades today that all brought in major draft capital.
Yeah, but Nikola being the number one guy. Chuma Okeke yesterday, 17 points, 6-for-6 from the field, 4-for-4 from three-point land, so really excited to see what Okeke can do moving forward. I feel like Orlando plays kind of a small ball lineup. They don't really have outside of Nikola. They didn't have a guy over 6'8" in their
kind
starting
rotation.
Kind of
positionless basketball was right. What Orlando was putting out there, because they drafted guys like Jonathan Isaac and Chuma, the guys that are in that 6'8", 6'9" range that should be able to guard multiple positions. I don't think Chuma necessarily fits into the category of being able to guard multiple positions, but I do think Jonathan Isaac did when he was healthy.
Right, right. And I feel like with Okeke moving forward, you know, he's only had over 26 minutes once this entire season. So I think he's definitely going to get a lot moving forward. And we talked about this when Okeke was here, and we're going to talk about it again, talking about positionless basketball. Okeke can guard and play against 1-4. I mean, he is an incredibly talented player. He can shoot the lights out of it. He can drive, get to the basket. Incredibly strong. We saw that in the North Carolina game before he tore his ACL, just the ability to muscle his way inside. And he's been playing pretty decent in the NBA. There have been nights that I've actually been watching games, and he will just, in the minutes that he does get, he will just be absolutely cold. I don't know what I don't know what to attribute that to. And then he'll have nights like this where he just doesn't miss. So I think moving forward, he's going to be able to allow himself to get more consistent minutes and get more consistent numbers. And I think the Magic are going to rely on him a lot more moving forward.
Well, they're going to have to. They traded everybody.
Right, right.
He's one of four players that the Magic have drafted that are still on the roster. Those guys include Jonathan Isaac,
right.
Chuma Okeke, of course, Mo Bamba. Right now, Jonathan Isaac is out hurt. Mo Bamba is a bust. He's like third on the ESPN depth chart for him. And then why am I forgetting the fourth player that is still with them right now? Cole Anthony. There you go. Cole Anthony is the other guy that they drafted. And it's like Cole Anthony and Chuma Okeke are going to be starters now from now on. Like, these
That's
guys
crazy
are at the,
to think about.
Well, right now Chuma Okeke is averaging 21.7 minutes a game. I know you brought up that he has only played more than 26 minutes one time this season, was what you said. Was it one time?
Yes, sir.
And then you got 21.7 minutes per game on his average this year. So that's pretty good minutes for somebody who's been an in and out of the lineup there. He's played in 28 games here for the Magic this season. I think he's a better three-point shooter in the NBA than he was in college. He's averaging 38.2% from beyond the arc. That's outstanding. I know we're all so accustomed to guys shooting above 40% and, you know, spraying it from the logo in this day and age, but a power forward shooting the ball at a 38% clip is pretty darn good. His free throw percentage could come up a little bit. 62.5% isn't where you want to be at. I feel like he was a better free throw shooter than that at Auburn, but you'd love to see that come up. I don't know what's the deal with that right now, but in his first full year of playing, averaging about 5 points a game, is at 4.9 right now, 1.8 assists and 3.5 rebounds. Those numbers are probably going to come up as right. as his minutes come up, but still, his averages are low for somebody that's playing nearly 22 minutes a game to only be averaging 5, 3.5, and 2. That's not great. You'd love to see that come up, but he's going to play a larger role because we have to understand this offense did not run through Chuma Okeke. This offense ran through Vukovic. This offense ran through Fournier. Those guys are gone now. They blew it up. The Orlando Magic now, like Chuma Okeke is front and center right now.
I can't believe they also traded Aaron Gordon.
Yeah, I ran through Aaron Gordon too. Yeah, I mean, you keep going through it right now. Aaron Gordon and Gary Clark are to the Denver Nuggets. Gary Harris and R.J. Hampton are coming in alongside a protected 2025 first-round pick, so there's some draft capital. Evan Fournier went to the Celtics for 2 second-round picks, more draft capital. And then Nikola Vukovic to the Chicago Bulls for Wendell Carter Jr., Otto Porter Jr., and a top-4 protected 2021 first-rounder and a 2023 first-rounder. This is clearly a signal of intent that the Orlando Magic are going back into rebuild mode. They literally traded away their top-3 players, which means that Chuma Okeke has now moved into that category for the Orlando Magic as a top-3 player. Otto Porter Jr., when healthy, pretty good player. He's coming in. That'll help him out. He'll probably take some minutes from Chuma. I don't know if we're going to see a huge minute spike for Chuma Okeke, but I think his role does shift a little bit. He's now the Orlando Magic are now being shifted into a category of a team right now that it's kind of a community approach. It's where you see bottom feeders are at often. You put them in that category of like, well, you never know who's going to end up showing up and having a big night amongst the guys that they are hoping are going to be the future, you know what I mean? But it's typically a group effort of a bunch of C-rated players. That's where the Orlando Magic are at right now, a bunch of C-rated players and who is going to end up developing into a future piece for them. And Chuma Okeke now is going to have that opportunity to put that on full display because there is no, like, number one on this team anywhere.
Yeah, I feel like that's a very accurate statement. And like you mentioned earlier, his numbers are just only going to go up with his minutes. Now, like you said, are we going to see a huge minute spike from Chuma Okeke?
Probably not.
Probably not. But I would expect him to potentially at least get a starting role. And like you said, his role is going to change. You hit the nail on the head, by the way. Just like his role is going to change. He's going to become a more focal point of this offense because of his ability to create and his ability to shoot. So moving forward, Auburn's got 2 potential starters now in the NBA that are getting significant minutes and playing significant roles on their respective teams. Now, my concern is, will Jared Harper ever get to see the floor for the New York Knicks, even though they have so many different guards, just like the Phoenix Suns? We don't know moving forward, but I will say this.
It also doesn't help that Julius Randle can, you know, assist 17 times in a ball game. Right. I don't know how that's possible, but go ahead.
But I will say that you don't neglect and you don't ignore a guy that was first team all G League. I mean, it's the G League, but you don't ignore Jared Harper in this situation.
If the Knicks do, somebody else eventually will take a shot.
He's too good to pass up on, and he deserves a shot in the NBA. I really wanted to talk about Harper, I'm sorry, because he's my favorite player of all time to come through Auburn. Really like this guy. I feel like he has just as much potential as Okeke. I'd like to see him on an NBA roster.
We might see it. I wonder why it's taking so long for someone to take a shot with him, and it probably has to do with his size, but he ended up first team all G League. He's a super efficient player, and he's a good distributor of the basketball. I don't know why an NBA team has yet to jump on him, but the Knicks right now have kept him away, and as excited as the Knicks social media team was to have Jared Harper and how often they talked about him and how often they posted about him on their social media page during the summer before the season started. You're like, as soon as they got him, it became like an I Love Jared Harper fan page on their mm-hmm. social media page on Twitter. And it's like, whoa, why is this not materialized? You just never know. Another note about the Magic here with Chuma Okeke. You look at this, 4 of the top 5 scores for the Orlando Magic this season in terms of averages, no longer with the Magic.
Okiki's going to get the ball more.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Vukovic gone, Fournier gone, Gordon gone, Markel Fultz obviously gone. Terrence Ross is the 3rd leading scorer on the team at the moment. He is now going to move into that top category at 16 points a game. Cole Anthony at 11 a game. Dwayne Bacon's getting 9.9. That's a little obscure. He's one of the guys who have played the most games on this team alongside Vukovic that's played all 44 for the Magic up to this point. Yeah, I mean, only two players have played all 44 games for the Magic this year, and Vukovic was one of them, and he's gone. Look at Chuma Okeke's numbers this year. Once again, he's played 28 of the 44. He's averaging 21.7 minutes, which is up there on this sheet. That, once again, is minutes-wise for the Magic. Chuma Okeke's right there in the mix. He is included amongst a group of players that are averaging about 21 to 26 minutes a game. And when I said earlier there's a bunch of C-rated players that are all going to be averaging about the same amount of minutes, well, you look at it, Fournier was averaging 30, Vukovic 34, Gordon 29, and Fultz is already gone, so I'm not even going to talk about him. But you talk about those three players that were traded away today, those were all leading the team in minutes. They're all gone. Terrence Ross is the only outlier now.
And my question
Everybody's going to be averaging like 22 minutes a game.
Right. It's like, who do you turn to for consistent offense? And it's like, Chuma Okeke's definitely got to be in that mix somewhere.
And this isn't me trying to turn this into, you know, talking about the Magic here. What are the Magic going to do? The Magic clearly are tanking here. The Orlando Magic made the decision saying, hey, and maybe tanking's not the right word, they're clearly signaling, hey, we're a team that is set for rebuild, right? And like at the end of last year, and the way that the Magic were playing, it's like, I don't know if we foresaw this, and maybe that's why it took till midseason here for the Magic to say, all right, guys, it's time to pack it up, it's time to start over. But Chuma Okeke will definitely benefit from this. With the way that he's playing basketball recently, he's really coming on as the season is progressing. He needs to turn into a more efficient player. His PER, player efficiency rating, is one of the lowest on the team at 9.6. Probably is the lowest of the team amongst guys who actively play for this roster. 9.6 is abysmal. Once again, you talk about his averages, only 5 a game in terms of points and 22 minutes played per game. That's pretty bad. So he does need to improve, but he's going to get the ball a whole lot more, and that may signal improvement. So Chuma Okeke's a guy to watch out for in the NBA because he benefited a lot today by the trades. We talked to Justin Ferguson of the Auburn Observer on the other side of this break. Stay with us on ESPN 106.7 and on Fox Sports Central Alabama.
Stay on the line. More of the show when we come back.
You're on the line with Noah Gardner and Lance Dahl on ESPN 106.7 and on Fox Sports Central Alabama. Follow ESPN 106.7 on Facebook and Twitter to keep up with the latest going on at the station between the Max Roundtable, On the Line, The Drive with Bill Cameron. There's 7 hours of local sports talk radio. That's all on ESPN 106.7. Find the website on ESPNAU.com. And as promised, we got Justin Ferguson of the Auburn Observer on the line with us for this segment. Justin, how you doing today, my man?
I'm doing well. How are y'all?
We are doing excellent. Just happy we didn't get washed away last night with the weather. And we're going to start this off with a little NBA topics here, or at least one NBA topic that we were just talking about. The Orlando Magic decided to clean house today. I'm not sure how much you've kept up with the trade festivities today in the league, but it seems like Chuma Okeke's got a lot to benefit from today, considering Aaron Gordon, Vukovic, and Fournier all ended up getting traded away today for substantial draft capital. What are your thoughts on how this translates for Chuma Okeke on the Orlando Magic?
Well, it's huge for Chuma because, I mean, Chuma coming in when he got drafted by Orlando, remember, he was right outside of being a lottery pick. The Magic had just made the playoffs as an 8 seed, which has kind of been their range for most of the last few years. And so they decided to go ahead and blow it up. And, I mean, couldn't have perfect timing for Chuma's cards to start heating up around this time. You know, last night didn't miss a shot, and what was a big performance for him. And then today they change over their roster, and it makes a lot of sense. I mean, I think Chuma Okeke, you know, he was going to have a hard time with that roster being kind of like a starter quality dude right now. Now they're, you know, going to be building for the future. They're going to be building around guys like Cole Anthony and Jonathan Isaac, and Okeke fits right in with those guys, and seeing what kind of picks they'll get down the road. So I think, you know, he's not going to be playing on a team that's going to be quite as successful right now, but I think it's going to be more playing time for him. And if he plays like he did last night on a more regular basis, I think he's going to be in for a really good little run here as a key player of the Magic.
This may sound a little harsh, but the Orlando Magic have, as you've already put it, they floundered at that 8 spot and then below in the Eastern Conference. Do you trust the Orlando Magic to actually complete a rebuild?
Well, I mean, I think this is the crazy thing about them is, like, they've never fully committed to one in a while. They've always had somebody they can kind of lean on, you know, throughout their time. And then these last few years, they've just, you know, they've had a collection of really good players to great play. I mean, Vucevic is, you know, all-star caliber center, and he's playing the best ball of his career right now. So when you bring a guy like – you have a guy like that, you know, it's hard because you have to stack superstars in order to compete, you know, for championships in the NBA. It's harder for the Magic to do that right now. So I think they were just kind of in the spot. You don't want to be in the middle. You know, you either want to be rebuilding or you want to be contending. Getting stuck in the middle is not the place you want to be for an NBA team. So I was surprised that the Orlando decided to go ahead and blow it all up. But, you know, we shall see. I mean, it's been a weird run for that franchise. But, you know, I like the guy, like, on top of Chuma, I really like Cole Anthony. I like Isaac. I like some of those guys that they're going to be able to build around in the future. Get a few more pieces and start building that way. You know, maybe it'll pay off in the long run. But, you know, I say kudos to them for making the tough call, saying, hey, you know what, we don't want to be that team that gets swept in the first round every year of the playoffs when we do make it.
Switching gears here and translating this now to Auburn basketball, which kind of is blowing their roster up at the moment right now. What do you make of all these transfers? Is it cause for concern, or is this maybe, as Zach Blackerby put it yesterday, a little bit more by design to try and bring some new blood into the roster?
Yeah, I mean, I think a guy like Jamal Johnson, you know, transferring out, he's going to get exactly what you want out of him. You know, kind of moving forward, he's going to get a chance to be a starter at a Conference USA school, mid-major, back in his hometown. I think that's a perfect move for him. If you see where Javon Franklin ends up, I think he could have a similar track where, you know, he could be a starter somewhere at a mid-major school. You know, Justin Powell's the only one that I think is kind of the one where you're like, eh, because, you know, he was a guy that you would thought that Auburn would have, you know, maybe if he wasn't a every-game starter next season, he's your best three-point shooter, and he was a guy that a lot of people wanted to see play in that two role. And that, from everything I've heard, really kind of took Auburn by surprise. But, you know, the other two kind of clearing the decks. You bring in Zeb Jasper, helps you out at your guard spot. You needed a guard. So if you think of it in a way where you kind of trade a power forward and a reserve guard for a guy who could help you out on the defensive end and is an experienced scorer at the college level, I think that's a good pickup. And then we'll see where it goes moving forward. I mean, you know, Sharif Cooper and JT Thor, you know, JT Thor's already entered the draft. His statement the other day makes it sound like he would love to stay in the draft and get drafted, even though I think a lot of Auburn fans expected him to come back. We'll see if the right NBA team says the magic words to him and convinces them to stay in the draft. And then Sharif Cooper, I mean, I think it's still kind of 50-50 where he comes back or goes, but, you know, it's all about what NBA teams think of him. Enough of them say, hey, we think of you as a lottery pick, or hey, we think of you as a mid-round guy. You know, he'll probably pull the trigger there. So in that case, Auburn will have a lot of room to kind of add on to that roster. I think when you look at a guy like Xavier Pinson being connected to Auburn right now, I think it's one of those things where I'd be surprised if Pinson came to Auburn if Sharif Cooper came back. So I think it's already, you know, get a guy with a ton of experience to come in and play in that point guard role. We know they're connected to a lot of good shooters out here on the market, including Myron Jones from Penn State. So it's just one of those things where it was a weird year, and they were turning a lot, and they're bringing in talent like Trey Alexander, of course, Jabari Smith. That's going to push some guys around. And I just think we're going to see a ton more transfers than usual this season, not only because of, you know, the waivers coming up and all the transfer reform happening there, but I think the COVID season kind of did a number on a lot of these guys, and I think they're going to see a lot of movement because of it.
Well, quick question here to you then before we wrap up basketball and move on to football then. And I know this is still relatively early because the NCAA tournament's still going on and these guys still making their decisions. But in your gut right now, or maybe on some info that you've got, is there a player that's on Auburn's roster right now that you think is not going to be on Auburn's roster next year because of the NBA?
I think, you know, Sharif is one of those guys that's kind of back and forth at this point. I mean, there's NBA, you know, scouts and, you know, NBA draft experts who say, hey, he's probably a late-round guy. And I would be curious if he would be willing to make the move then. But, you know, recently you're hearing some more buzz about possibly him getting back into the lottery picture. I think it's just going to matter of, like, how he grades out, you know, what NBA teams tell him. So he's the one I think is the most likely not to come back. But I still think it's pretty close to 50-50 because there are plenty of reasons for him to stay back in school. Thor's going to be the wild card, man. Like, I really don't know what to make all of what he said in that statement just because I think he wants to show NBA teams that he's serious about going out a year early if that's the path for him. But also, I mean, you can see the potential of a guy like him if he decides to come back to school. I think the one thing with Thor, though, to keep in mind, if he does leave, Jabari Smith would play that position and fill right in. So that, you know, talent-wise, it's a big loss, but like role-wise, Auburn would be able to fill in pretty easily for him.
Speaking with Justin Ferguson of the Auburn Observer, let's switch over to football now then. We haven't gotten to speak with you about this yet. What were your thoughts on Auburn football's open practice?
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I was really, really, really enjoyed the time out there. Got to learn a lot. I think fans got to see a lot. Players got to play with a little bit more of a energy because they had fans in the stands. I think the coaches got a win. But, you know, guys could end up coming on campus and visit if they're recruits. You could kind of get steal a visit, so to speak, if you want to do that. And also, it's just good PR for the team and a new coaching staff. So I thought it was a really good time. Learned a ton. Kind of got to see a first look at kind of the depth chart, kind of pecking order, and got to see kind of how this coaching staff runs their practices and how they interact with players. It's a little different in a number of ways than what we've seen out of Gus Malzahn's teams in the past. So we'll see if this changes enough, you know, to be, you know, what Auburn fans want in the future, which is to be a more consistent ball club.
In what ways are the practices different from Malzahn?
Yeah, I think one of the big ones that a lot of people have talked about is, like, offense and defense are all out on one field. And, you know, under Gus Malzahn, especially when they're up at the indoor, offense and defense were kind of split up a lot, you know, unless they were working team stuff, you know, offense versus defense. But, you know, I think the ability that those guys are on the field all at the same time, there's constant motion, the guys are moving around a ton. It helps for a guy like Brian Harsin to float. You know, when we watched him on Saturday, he was, you know, had his hand in a lot of different areas. You know, I think pretty much every position group, you know, got some close attention from him. And that's just kind of a different vibe for him because Malzahn, you mostly just stuck to the offense and special teams, you know, when he was at Auburn. Now, Brian Harsin's letting Derek Mason run the show on defense, as he should. But I think that was one of the big differences I saw, is just that everybody closer together, everybody on that one field kind of stacked up, you know, pretty close. It allowed Harsin to kind of go move around and be more of an overall coach, you know, kind of bouncing around from all these different places.
You brought up the depth chart a bit, and of course we're seeing reports about Jeremiah Wright storming the top of the nose tackle depth chart. And then recently you also see, you know, Javarius Johnson's another name. How realistic is it that, and we'll start with Jeremiah Wright and then maybe also go towards Javarius Johnson as well, how realistic is it that these guys usurp a starting role for someone in front of them on the depth chart?
Yeah, the Jeremiah Wright thing's really interesting because I think Auburn's going to have some room to play him next year, even if Tyrone Truesdale stays at that number one spot. I think Derek Mason said it best this week. He's pushing it. You know, there's good competition in that first starting spot. Now, Truesdale, with all his experience, I think it's a really good fit for what he does, but I think this is what we're seeing with Wright is just a guy getting rewarded for the hard work he's put in. He's a great fit at defensive tackle. He plays with a ton of power. He's big. He's the biggest defensive player Auburn has on the roster. So, I mean, Auburn's going to move some things around and change up their fronts, you know, and use a lot of different packages this season on the defensive line. That even if Truesdale holds on to that number one spot, as we all expect, I think you're going to see Wright play a good bit. Javarius Johnson's a really interesting example. Felt like, you know, most of his snaps were with the second team. He worked with the first team a decent bit also in Saturday scrimmage, but it felt like every time he was out there, he was catching a ball of some kind. He makes a ton of sense. If Auburn wants to go into 10 personnel, go four wide, he's the slot guy. He makes a lot of sense there. They can move him around, put him in motion. He does a lot of different things. You know, Mike Bobo has been pretty impressed with him early on. I'd be very, very curious because that wide receiver group really is up for grabs. You lose your top three guys. And on top of that, Shedrick Jackson and Xavion Capers, probably your two leaders, you would think, heading into this offseason, are hurt. So they're not 100%. So it gives an opportunity for a guy like Javarius Johnson to step up. He has a size and a skill set that's different from a lot of people on that roster. So I think he's taking advantage of it.
Justin, I appreciate you taking the time to hop on with us today. Tell everybody how they can find all the great stuff you're putting out.
Yeah, auburnobserver.com. You check that out. $6 a month to $60 a year. If you sign up there, you get access to everything we got. We email it straight to you, podcast and stories. We're doing something pretty much every day this morning. We did a premium podcast, myself and Painter Sharpless, where we talked a lot of Auburn football and basketball, a lot of the topics we just talked about here. You check that out at auburnobserver.com. And, we'll have a free podcast for everybody to listen to over the weekend. So check that out. If you sign up today, tomorrow morning, hopefully if the weather holds off right now, we'll have an open viewing period for practice here in about an hour or so. And I will post my observations from that early Friday morning. So you can get that emailed straight in your inbox at 6 a.m. if you sign up at the Observer right now.
Justin, I appreciate it, my man. I hope you stay dry out there, and let's pray this weather stays away.
That would be great. Appreciate it, guys.
That was Justin Ferguson of the Auburn Observer on the line with us today. If you ever miss a conversation with any of our guests, or if you ever miss a show, be sure to go and find the podcast wherever you get your podcast. We wrap up hour number one here on the other side of this break. You're listening to On the Line. Wrapping up hour number one of On the Line, Noah Gardner and Lance Dahl with you on ESPN 106.7 and on Fox Sports Central Alabama. Phone lines are open, 334-321-1390. Big thank you out there to Justin Ferguson of the Auburn Observer for joining us in that previous segment. If you missed that conversation, or if you ever miss a conversation, ever miss a clip, go and find the podcast wherever you get your podcast. Before we wrap up hour number one here, let's take a listen to what's on TV tonight. Hey everybody, it's Noah Gardner with What's On Tonight. At 8 on ABC tonight, there is a new episode of Grey's Anatomy. On NBC starting at 7, there are two new episodes of Superstorm. Some movie selections for tonight, genetically engineered dinosaurs, what could go wrong? Jurassic Park is on AMC at 7. Dumb and Dumber is on CMT at 7. Over on Freeform, you can find Shrek on at 8. A pair of Indiana Jones movies are on, Raiders of the Lost Ark at 6, and The Temple of Doom at 8, both on Paramount. In live sports, college basketball has 4 games happening in the quarterfinal round of the NIT. 4-seed Mississippi State will play 2-seed Richmond at 5 on ESPN2. At 6 on ESPN, catch 3-seed NC State against 1-seed Colorado State. At 8 on ESPN, 2-seed Boise State and 1-seed Memphis. And rounding out the night at 9 on ESPN2, 4-seed Louisiana Tech and 3-seed Western Kentucky. In the NBA, there are 2 games on TNT. The Trailblazers and the Heat play at 6:30, and the 76ers and the Lakers close out the action at 9. I'm Noah Gardner, and that's what's on TV tonight. Back on the line here, wrapping up hour number one, Noah Gardner and Lance Dahl here on the line with you. We got about 5 minutes left here in hour number one. College football topic here. Oklahoma's Lincoln Riley defended his stance on not releasing Chandler Morris upon his transfer to TCU. Hostage situation. He's going to have to sit out a year at TCU. Looking at college football from 1,000 feet above, not this Oklahoma instance. I want to talk about this in a generic sense. Are you in favor of what some people out there are proposing, a free agency-like transfer portal where there are no repercussions, players can just go wherever they want, whenever they want, or are you more conservative on this topic, saying that you like the way things are right now?
I would say that I lean more towards I like the way the things are right now. I don't really like the idea of kind of like pushing it towards more of what the NFL is like. I feel like the college game is definitely going in that direction with potential compensation moving forward for some of these players. And, I don't like the idea of a free agency kind of transfer portal. I didn't really like the idea of the transfer portal to begin with, where players were just going kind of like willy-nilly all over the place. And we saw what Jalen Hurts did at Oklahoma.
Did the transfer portal, though, really change the rules, though? It just created a place for them to all go and link them up with other universities, and it also provided them like this platform, I feel like, on their social media page to say, I'm entering the transfer portal. Like, everybody says that like it's some big deal, like they're going to space or something like that. Like, I'm going to an alternate universe, guys. Like, get on my level.
Well, I definitely feel like it, initially, like I said, I didn't like it, but I've adjusted to it. And it's like, I understand it now. I can see the benefits. I don't like the concept of just free agency to where you can go willy-nilly, because that doesn't allow a player to necessarily commit themselves to a school. And I feel like that provides issues with like the roster, and it would frustrate the coaching staffs. So I'm not a big fan of it.
Neither am I. I'm actually really conservative on this topic. I think that there could be some changes. So look, I like the way things are right now, because if you go to Wild West free agency, guys can go wherever they want, whenever they want, you're going to run into the issue of tampering. Don't tell me that tampering doesn't exist at the next level in the professional leagues. Don't tell me that tampering doesn't exist in the NBA. Teams get investigated for that all the time. Now, can they find anything? No, but it still exists. Like, take this example here. Vanderbilt player A ends up becoming a beast. least. All right, who's the quarterback at Vanderbilt right now? It's Ken something, right?
Ken Seals.
Yes, yeah, so say Ken Seals ends up becoming Navy SEAL level Ken Seals, right? Imagine he becomes a beast at Vanderbilt. Don't you know teams all over the place, players all over the place are going to be talking to this dude, trying to get them to come to their university?
Mm-hmm.
That is not a it totally affects competitive balance for me. So that's issue number one that I have with it, is it affects competitive balance and you run into the issue of tampering, which I don't think has a place in collegiate athletics when you're already talking about how unbalanced it is already at the top of collegiate athletics. Second here, I also want to get into some other objections that folks have with the way it is right now. People are saying, well, coaches can go wherever they want, whenever they want. Yes, that is true. So here's what I'll do for you then. I'll say that is true. These guys, oftentimes, they're not just committing to a university. They're committing to a coach that will feed them stuff in recruiting. Like, I'm going to be here for four years, man. It's like, you can't promise him that.
And they will literally feed you at Tennessee. They'll give you some McDonald's.
So, very true. yeah, I mean, you run into that issue. It's like, yeah, these guys do commit to more than just the school. They commit to the coaches, their position coaches, their coordinators, their head coaches, however you want to structure this. But I'll say this, maybe you incorporate a part of the waiver system. If the coach that you committed to, whether it be a position coach, coordinator, or a head coach leaves, then you get a free transfer waiver to somewhere else. Maybe if you want to incorporate that, whatever. That's just something that I'm thinking through right now. Maybe it needs to be something as high up as head coach. Don't do it every time a position coach leaves, because those change every year. You know, you probably shouldn't be banking on where you're going to school just solely based off of your position coach. A lot of it should factor into your coordinator and head coach. Maybe that's something that you could work in there, because I know that that's not always going to provide a waiver. But the other thing is, they're handing out waivers like candy right now. Like, guys are getting waivers all over the place. So I mean, it almost is kind of already like a free agency scenario. I don't know if it's tight enough as is.
Yeah, I was about to say, I don't feel like players committing to position coaches and then those position coaches leaving and then the players getting upset over it. I don't feel like it happens that often enough to make a change to what's already going on right now. And
let me amend something on my statement too about guys getting waivers like candy. Big name players are getting waivers like candy.
That's exactly
what
I was about to say.
Big name players aren't having to sit out. The guys that are transferring from Illinois are trying to transfer back home to Illinois.
That was exactly what I was
going to
say.
Guys trying to transfer to smaller schools, other places, those are the guys that are not getting waivers.
That's exactly right. It's the guys that generate money, the guys like Justin Fields, who are getting immediate waivers. It's not kids like
the
Illinois tight end that need to go back home to their dying grandfather to play school there. It's just it's unrealistic.
That's it for hour number one of On the Line. We'll be back with hour number two coming up here on ESPN 106.7 and on Fox Sports Central Alabama. Don't go anywhere. Keep it on that radio dial.
You are On the Line, live on Fox Sports Central Alabama on 98.3 FM in Birmingham and Sylacauga, and in Auburn and Opelika on ESPN 106.7. Listen online at foxsports983.com or espnau.com. You are On the Line with Noah Gardner and Levi Fitzwater. Join the show by calling 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
Hour number two of On the Line, Noah Gardner, Lance Dahl on ESPN 106.7 and on Fox Sports Central Alabama. One more hour left in the show before the drive with Bill Cameron takes over from 4 to 6 right here once again on ESPN 106.7 and on Fox Sports Central Alabama. Phone lines are open. The number to get you through to On the Line, 334-321-1390. If you want to be on the line with us, once again, 334-321-1390. Only 16 teams remain in the tournament, and it has been unpredictable. Even though it is always unpredictable, those of you in our March Mayhem Challenge attempted to predict the winners anyway, and it is really close right now. Through the first two rounds, Karina of Auburn owns the bracket closest to perfection, but only by one game above Walter of Opelika. There's a lot of basketball to be played before we have a champion, and the TV is given away. But congratulations to Karina for having the best picks through the first two rounds. The ESPN 106.7 Basketball Mayhem Challenge is presented by Taziki's Mediterranean Cafe, Brubaker Motors, the Orthopedic Clinic, and Rick's Audio, Video, and Appliance. To check and see how your picks are faring, as well as where you stand on our leaderboard, log on to ESPNAU.com or the ESPN 106.7 app. We'll get into some March Madness talk later on in the show here. We're going to start off hour number two, ranking the top five SEC basketball and football coaching duos. I saw an article about this online, and I was like, hey, that's a pretty good topic. That's a pretty good offseason topic. Let's dive into it and give our opinions on that. So here we go, ranking the top five SEC basketball and football coaching duos. We want to hear from you as well. If you disagree with us, come and chirp at us. Once again, 334-321-1390. Lance, fifth on your list. Give it to me.
So I actually reworked my list after I did it initially because I realized that I didn't even have Alabama in the top five.
Yeah, I looked at it. I was like, well, I didn't realize that right away either. And then it occurred to me, I was like, wait a minute.
Wait a second. But I have, after reworking the list and really thinking about it, I have LSU at number five for a couple of reasons. Number one, I believe that every other football coach on this list is a better college football coach than Ed Orgeron, and I understand he had that year with Joe Burrow and LSU and what may be the greatest offense to ever step foot on a college football field.
He didn't have anything to do with that.
He didn't have anything to do with that.
Other than he encouraged those fellows by the name of Joe Brady and Joe Burrow to come to the University of or to go to Louisiana State University.
I would argue that the position coaches had a lot more to do with how that team actually performed outside of Orgeron. Now, is he a good assistant coach hire? Maybe, but he's not himself a great football coach. We've seen that at other
excellent
universities.
Excellent interim tag.
Yeah, he did play pretty well as an interim coach. And then Will Wade is a pretty decent college basketball coach. I will say that, I feel like Orgeron really weighs LSU down on this list, so I have them at number five.
Question to you. I've got them at four. We'll come back to that later, but question to you. Odds that these guys are both still at LSU 2 years from now?
Excellent
question.
If the NCAA finally does something about Will Wade, I don't think he's going to be there in a year. I really hope they do, just based off of what they've done to Auburn over the past year. I hope they actually crack down on some of the guys that are obviously doing things that they should not be doing. And as far as Orgeron goes...
Yeah, Patino's in the tournament, and then Auburn's over here like...
I wish we had Cooper.
Yeah.
As far as Orgeron goes, I think he gets two more years. I think he holds on. I think LSU
even with all of the storm that's swirling around LSU at the moment.
I think the way it looks to me right now,
because you got to remember there's an investigation into the football program too.
Obviously the NCAA doesn't really care about what the LSU University of LSU's.
University of LSU.
Wow, good job, Lance. Good job.
Louisiana State University. It's an acronym, son.
Gosh gracious.
It's an acronym.
I don't really feel like they care what's going on down there, and I think they're going to let Orgeron kind of ride it out. I think he finishes with an above 500 record over the next 2 years. I don't see him finishing with a losing record. I think he's going to hold on for just a little bit longer.
Let's look up LSU's football schedule next year. I'm okay with going down a rabbit hole.
See, this year, I thought LSU...
My question is... Where's the quarterback position at with these guys? Sure, if Miles Brennan ends up back as a starter, yes, the guy was throwing for like 320 yards a game, but it was not an efficient 320 yards a game. Anybody can throw for 320 yards a game when you're throwing the ball 50 times.
And you have a running back that I don't even think they had a running back average over 300 or have over 300 yards last season. Like their running game was abysmal. Like it was really, really bad.
They open up on the road at UCLA in Pasadena. I'm super high up on this UCLA team coming into this year because we've seen a steady upward trajectory under Chip Kelly. People might be saying, it's UCLA, and they're Pac-12, and they don't have as good of players as LSU and all these other. And that is so true. They do not recruit as well as LSU,
DTR,
all these things. But
if DTR is still there, UCLA has the potential to be a really good football
and
team.
And by DTR, you mean Dorian Thompson-Robinson.
Yes,
and
sir.
He is indeed still there. This UCLA football team has got the offense down. The defense, still MIA. Maybe it gets better this upcoming year. And obviously, LSU is going to probably get a slight offensive boost for the fact that UCLA's defense is so poor. But you look at UCLA last year in the Pac-12, like they competed with some of the best teams that the Pac-12 had to offer, which once again, people are saying, well, it's the Pac-12. It's like, I'm just telling you, y'all, watch out.
Still
this
a power
game
five
is
group.
This is at UCLA's place. This very well could be an upset especially if LSU doesn't have the quarterback position figured out, which nothing has given me an indication that Ed Orgeron is capable of improving his quarterback situation unless he can bring in a quarterback by the name of Bo Giroux.
Yeah, I agree with you. Looking at the rest of this schedule, yeah, they've got, let's see, they can potentially lose to Auburn, potentially lose to Kentucky, Florida, Ole Miss, Bama, potentially Arkansas.
I think Florida, Bama, and Auburn are all else. Yeah. I think Auburn finally gets a win in Baton Rouge.
Maybe I may be rethinking this. Maybe Orgeron might not be able to stick around after a couple years.
I got losses to Auburn, Florida, Alabama. So there's three right there. A&M's iffy. Ole Miss, Lane Kiffin's going to be able to score. If I'm saying UCLA can upset LSU, Ole Miss could at their own place. LSU's got to go on the road, and we've seen bad Ole Miss teams compete with, you know, pretty decent LSU teams. I'm just saying there's not a whole lot of sure wins on this schedule for me. And a lot of it centers on the fact that, and yes, LSU recruits great. And sure, if you want to say that this team's going to find a way to win 7-8 games this next year, which they probably will 100% just because we're finally playing a 12-game schedule and they're going to win some of their 50-50 games and they're going to lose some of their 50-50 games, that's fine. But are LSU people going to be happy with Ed Orgeron going 7-5?
I don't think so, but I think they will keep him around for at least one or two more years just to see.
I think 7-5 earns him another year. I'll give you that. But my question was 2 years. Is he there after
this
year?
So if he goes 7-5 2 years in a row, oh, that's iffy.
I think he's gone. 100%.
I can see it going either way. I can see them firing him, but the question is who would they go after? I just don't know who they would replace
him with.
Well,
the coaching market changes dramatically. Or as you like to say, dramatically.
Yep.
It changes dramatically every, 5 years because there are new hotshot coaches. 5 years ago, was Matt Campbell a hotshot?
No.
No, right? So, like, the it changes every so often. And, 2-3 years from now, if you're looking at a coaching carousel, like, I think LSU's going to have a coaching change with football and basketball. I'm going to go ahead and say, I think football and basketball experiences coaching changes at LSU after 2 years.
Picture this real quick before we move on. UCF, Malzahn has a couple of really, really good years.
Gets back into the
Power 5 coaching room. What if we see him at LSU here in 3 or 4 years? Could that be a possibility?
Don't put that evil on me, Ricky Bobby. Don't do that. All right, fifth on my list as we are ranking our top five SEC basketball and football coaching duos. I'm going 5 with Kentucky at 5. And this is not about John Calipari, who I do think consistently underachieves every single year at UK, and the fact that he found a way with the level at which Kentucky recruits in basketball, I'm bewildered as to how he lost control of the SEC to the point where he went many games below 500 this year, like 7 or 8 games below 500. So I'm still just absolutely bewildered by that fact. But they're not fifth on this list because of Calipari, because he still has a good track record as a basketball coach at Kentucky, of course. I'm fifth on this list because I think Mark Stoops is the worst of all the coaches that I rank here. I think he's still a good coach. Mark Stoops obviously has Kentucky punching above its weight class. And then Calipari, I think, still underachieves as a basketball coach. There's just a lot of underachieving here for me to have Kentucky any higher. And also, there's not a whole lot of just like, there's not a whole lot of pizzazz, what I'm talking about. Some of these other groups of basketball and football coaching duos, I'm like, man, those guys have some personality. Those guys have some punch to it when you talk about their names. Mark Stoops doesn't do a whole lot for me in terms of name value, and I'm pretty low on Calipari considering he underachieves every year at Kentucky.
I can get behind it. I do have Kentucky higher on this list. I understand where you're coming from, although I do feel like if we're talking about consistency from these coaches.
These guys are consistent.
They're consistent, and, I understand the state of the Kentucky football program just as a whole, like, over the past, 10 or so years, they've been terrible most of the time, but Stoops has kind of brought them out of this dark age, and he's made a bowl 5 years in a row. And they're consistently an 8 or 9 win program, and I think he's a very underrated, undervalued coach.
Had Auburn folks uncomfortable week 1, and that's not something that we traditionally talk about with Kentucky football being a team that can, be in the SEC East pitcher, halfway through the season. But they've at least not been erased, Mark Stoops makes them competitive. Let's go down to 4 on our list. I'll go ahead because we've already talked about this team. I got LSU at 4 with Ed Orgeron, Will Wade, I've already made my opinions on this known. I don't think these two coaches are there 2 years from now. After two full seasons from now in both basketball and football, I don't think we see these two coaches at LSU anymore. But right now, considering, yeah, Orgeron just won a national championship 2 years ago in football, or 2 seasons ago in football, that is, they get Orgeron's boosted a little bit more above Mark Stoops. And Ed Orgeron's winning 8 games every year in football when it's not an odd 2020 year. So I've got Ed Orgeron there at 4 amongst football coaches. And then Will Wade, I think he's a better basketball coach than Calipari is if we hadn't found out that he cheated to get there, right? Like, yeah. or allegations are against him that he cheated, you know, and that there's some, you know, audio tapes and things like that that sound a little sketchy. But like, Will Wade had LSU punching above its weight class as well. So like, Calipari, I still think the better basketball coach, but I would give the edge to Orgeron over Stoops at the moment just because of the national title. So the combination there of winning between Wade and Orgeron put me ahead of Stoops and Calipari at Kentucky.
I do want to point out that we have seen not necessarily fluke coaches. I don't want to call Gene Chizik a fluke coach, but we have seen SEC coaches in the past win a national title and then 2 years later
Orgeron's in that category, 100%.
I think he's definitely in that category, and we'll just have to see how it plays out. I don't see him, now that we're talking about it more and more, I don't see him at the program 2 years from now.
Who's your four?
I have Dan Mullen and Mike White at number four, and the reason I have them so low on this list is we talked about it a little bit earlier off air. It's like, you know, Mike White's won at least one game every single time he's gone to the NCAA tournament, and then he has that Elite Eight run where they lost to South Carolina in a fantastic game, by the way. But I just don't see a whole lot from this team. Again, they're consistent. They're very consistent. Both of them are, but they're always one step away from getting over the hump. And I feel like they fit well at number four on this list. Mullen, 29-9 in his career, may have one of the most talented 8-4 teams ever offensively last year. But he only had two losing seasons at Mississippi State in the 9 years that he was there. I think that accounts for something. Obviously a very talented coach, quarterback whisperer, never really found a way to get over the hump, not a very good recruiter. Mike White has been solid, but again, just not really over the top. There's not a whole lot of pizzazz or spice in either of these guys. So I have them at number four.
Should we go on to number three here? You know, going on about here with Florida right now, Dan Mullen, Mike White, I've got them a little bit higher up on my list later on. So we'll get to that in just a little bit. But on the other side of this break here on the line, we will keep going here. Some college football news, SEC specific, George Pickens. How serious of a hit does Georgia's national championship aspirations take? And we'll revisit this list. Once again, ranking the top five SEC basketball and football coaching duos. You're on the line.
You are on the line with Noah Gardner and Levi Fitzwater. We'll be right back.
You're on the line with Noah Gardner and Lance Daw, ESPN 106.7, and on Fox Sports Central Alabama. Follow Fox Sports Central Alabama on Facebook to keep up with the latest going on in sports. On the line, The Drive with Bill Cameron, analysis, news, and more, all on Fox Sports Central Alabama on FoxSports983.com and on Facebook. That's FoxSports983.com. We'll revisit our list in a few moments of ranking the top five SEC basketball and football coaching duos. So far, I've given Kentucky and LSU at 5-4, and you've given LSU and Florida at 5-4. So we will get to our top three soon enough. But some college football news that we dipped our toe in yesterday. George Pickens reports now getting confirmed that he suffered a torn ACL, going to have surgery on it. Lance, you've got some hot takes when you're talking about the SEC East. I agree with them, but they're still hot takes considering most people out there would not expect this team to push Georgia. We'll get to that team in a moment, but how serious of a hit is this to Georgia's national championship aspirations?
So as far as national championship aspirations go, I think you and I both agree. I don't believe they can necessarily get to that point. I don't really feel like Pickens is a massive, massive loss for this Georgia football team, because I look at the receivers that they return, and we talked about this off air. I don't feel like this is a bad receiver group by any means.
Is there a stud in that room, though, now without Pickens?
I think there are a couple of guys that you can look towards that could potentially break out and have a Pickens-like a year statistically. I think you can see a guy like Jermaine Burton, who was a serious deep ball threat for Georgia. I feel like you could see him break out this year. I think you can see a guy like Darnell Washington, former five-star, 6'7" tight end. Didn't really do a whole lot this year, but again, you've got a really, I would consider, borderline elite passer in JT Daniels returning. So we could definitely see him break out. Kyaris Jackson, we talked about this off air, not the most productive in terms of touchdowns, but definitely another receiver, a 500-yard receiver that we could see have some substantial statistics to kind of replace Pickens. So I don't really feel like this is a bad receiver group outside of Pickens. I think they can definitely pull their load. I just don't think this is a national championship blow. I don't feel like this changes their trajectory towards a national title.
Towards the back end of the season last year, George Pickens. Or let me rephrase this. Towards the back end of the season last year, Georgia's offense in their passing game oriented itself towards George Pickens. As the year went on, it went from more of a community approach, and George Pickens emerged as a leading candidate at wide receiver. Now, I didn't think Georgia was going to make it to the national championship anyway, but I think that we would all be foolish to think that this talented of a football team, with as bad as the rest of the SEC could be this year, especially the SEC East, and they look like they're the clear front runner of the SEC East, we would be foolish to think that this team won't be in the college football playoff picture at the end of the year with two SEC teams in the picture. Insert SEC West team here that probably factors in to be Alabama, and then SEC East team here with Georgia. You expect those two teams, then the winner of the SEC championship game, as it most of the time goes, ends up in the college football playoff probably as a one or a two seed. You understand? And so I did not expect Georgia to get past Alabama in the SEC championship anyway, because right. I just don't trust Kirby Smart's track record thus far. And something about their scheme on the offensive side of the ball seems to regress quarterbacks on a year-in, a year-out basis. And it just they make offense look hard. I think that's a great way to describe it. Some teams just make offense look difficult, like they're making it harder on themselves. Auburn, great example of that under Gus Malzahn. They just made offense look difficult. And so Georgia already fit into that category for me. But I think this is a big blow. I'm actually going to say this is a more serious hit than you are to this receiver room. Look, Georgia recruits receiver well. They recruit every position well. They've got good receivers that they've built up depth with over time. Kyaris Jackson's solid. Jermaine Burton's fine. I mean, you've got a group of receivers there that have been, you know, decent targets for them. But nobody has emerged as a stud. I wouldn't even say that George Pickens has far and away separated himself from the rest of the competition inside the receiver room as just, like, I don't think George Pickens has fully amounted to what people were labeling this guy as coming out of high school.
Right.
After his first 2 years at Georgia, I don't think that we have seen George Pickens just totally emerge and separate himself away from everybody else in that receiver room. Because when you look at targets and when you look at reception numbers, Kyaris Jackson and him were like equal. They both had 36 catches last year, and Kyaris Jackson actually edged him by a yard. Now Pickens had 6 touchdowns, which was double that of the closest player to him in that category, which I believe was Kyaris Jackson. So when you talk about this receiver room, by the end of the year last year, Pickens was showing more flashes that he was going to be this elite receiver, and he was going into his junior year this year. And so when you're talking about Pickens, you're like, maybe he was just young. Now he's finally coming into himself. Now he's not going to have that opportunity. And I'm not sure if we've seen any of these other Georgia receivers develop into what we were beginning to see George Pickens develop into at the end of last year. And I think that's a problem, because I'm not sure at the moment that JT Daniels has shown us that he is the type of quarterback that is going to make his receiver room far and above that much better. The most elite quarterbacks are capable of doing that. JT Daniels is a good quarterback. Not sure if I want to put him in elite category.
Yeah, I think he's borderline there because we haven't seen enough from him, but I do think he does have potential. As far as the George Pickens injury goes, like you said, I don't really feel like he's kind of separated himself for the rest of this receiver room, which is
partially a point in your favor.
Right, which is why I believe that this team was never in the national championship picture, because I don't think they could get past Alabama. I just don't see that happening.
It was kind of a facade. They may be in ranking alone, but still there's the big glaring Crimson Tide in front of them.
Right. So I don't think they get past Alabama and get into the national championship, even the playoff picture. But what I do think this changes is the SEC East picture just a little bit, because I feel like it puts the rest of the teams kind of on it in somewhat of a more even playing field. If you take out a number one receiver from a team, obviously they're going to be slightly worse.
So who's an SEC East team that might emerge?
Well, I think Florida is definitely the leading candidate there to potentially emerge. And I think
give me something spicier than that, though.
And I think behind them, I think we've talked about this, Missouri is
what I was fishing for.
In my opinion, is a lock to win 10 games this season. I mean, you look at their schedule. I think they're going to win 10 games this season. I think they've got enough talent. I think their schedule lines up for them very favorably. And now you take George Pickens out of the equation. You know, Missouri has to travel to Georgia. But what does that look like? I don't see this Georgia team running away with the SEC East title now that Pickens is out. And I think teams like Missouri and Florida can definitely challenge them.
So first 8 games of the Missouri schedule, we'll run through them here. And look, I agree with you. They should be favored through their first 8. And we have to remember, this is a Missouri team that did crack the top 25 last year when they were getting ready to play Georgia. This is a Missouri team that had 2 games above 500 at one point last year. I believe they were 5-3 at one point last season.
They were in the top 25 at one point.
This is a Missouri team that definitely, as I've said a couple times throughout the show, punched above their weight class last season with, Drinkwitz?
Drinkwitz is the head coach, yes.
That he's at, you know, his first year there at Missouri, and he ends up generating a win record and an improvement at Missouri that most people were not expecting. You look at this schedule here. Through their first 8, I think they should be favored in every single ball game. They got Central Michigan at home. I think that's a dub. You got Kentucky on the road, which this is a 50-50 game when you're talking about Mark Stoops getting the most out of his guys early in the season. But Kentucky's dealing with major quarterback issues right now. Do you trust Joey Gatewood to out-duel Connor Bazelak?
No, not this defense either. I think Missouri's got a pretty good defense as well.
So I'm expecting Missouri to win in Kentucky in Kroger Field, game 2, so they're 2-0. Southeast Missouri, dump, 3-0. At Boston College,
tricky.
Not going to be easy that they have to go up there. You're right. Not going to be easy that they have to get away from home. This is a 50-50 game. And the reason why I keep saying 50-50 games, I will come back to that. That's important. Bookmark that. 50-50 game there. I've called Kentucky on the road and Boston College on the road. They get Tennessee at home. I think that should be a dub. You got North Texas at home. Win. You got Texas A&M at home. 50-50 game, but at least you get them at home as opposed to having had Boston College and Kentucky on the road. And then you got Vanderbilt on the road after a bye week. So you get to play Vanderbilt after a bye week. You're going to beat Vanderbilt in Nashville. So I've listed 3 50-50 games, Kentucky, Tennessee, and A&M. The reason why I don't think Missouri is a 10-win team lock next year, I think Missouri goes 2-1 across those 3 50-50 games, because that's just how it plays out in college football. We may think that Missouri should be favored to win those games, but it's still so close, and you get different bounces of the football and different things go wrong in the course of a ball game that shift the momentum. Any little thing could affect the outcome in those contests, that I think we see Missouri drop one of those, whether it be Kentucky, Boston College, or A&M. But I definitely think, looking at their first 8 games, you can make an argument that this Missouri team should be favored in all of them. And if games were played on paper, maybe you say they're 8-0 going into the Georgia game on November 6th.
Right, and that's a very rational thing to say. I agree with you. I think that's a rational thing to say. I think the counter-argument is that they can also steal a game that they probably shouldn't win. I look at that game November 20th, against Florida. You know, Florida,
that one's at home.
We've seen the trouble that Missouri has given Florida over the past few years, and Florida doesn't have the offensive talent that they did last year. They lost Trask, they lost Tony, they lost Pitts.
It's Emory Jones at quarterback this year.
Emory Jones at quarterback. Do we see him progress and become not even good, but just decent enough to win a game?
I don't think we've seen anything out of him as a passer just yet.
I agree. So I think that's definitely something to look out for. So when you're looking at this schedule, there are definitely some things that can go either way. But I think, just based off of what I understand about this team and looking at the schedule, I'll double down on it. I think they're a lock.
I like it. Double down on it. There you go. I'm here for it. I can see how they get there. My issue is I was burned by this a couple of years ago.
Oh, gosh.
With Kelly Bryant. It was the exact same schedule.
Well, you were looking pretty good about halfway through the season, and then they actually did play Vanderbilt on the road, and we saw how that happened.
So I'm just saying, they had the schedule a couple years ago with Kelly Bryant, and you're like, yeah, this team should be 8-0, and then it didn't happen that way. You're listening to On the Line. We'll be back in just a moment. Stay with us on ESPN 106.7, Fox Sports Central Alabama.
Stay on the line. More of the show when we come back.
Live on ESPN 106.7 and on Fox Sports Central Alabama, Noah Garner and Lance Dahl with you on the line. Phone lines are open, 334-321-1390. We want to hear from you. Anything that's on your mind in the sports world, we're taking your calls, 334-321-1390. Going to revisit our top five SEC basketball and football coaching duos. We're ranking those five here, revisiting my list. At five, I had Kentucky with Mark Stoops and John Calipari. At four, LSU with Ed Orgeron and Will Wade. Lance, who are your five and four so far?
Let me look real quick. I believe I was pulling it up. It wouldn't load. I had Orgeron and Wade at number five and Mullen and White at number four.
All right, let's get into number three then. And since you bring up Dan Mullen, Mike White, I've got Florida at number three on my list as we jump into the elite class of top five SEC basketball and football coaching duos. At three, Florida, Dan Mullen, Mike White. These guys edge Ed Orgeron, Will Wade, Mark Stoops, and John Calipari because of Dan Mullen as a football coach alone. I think we've seen Dan Mullen succeed pretty much anywhere he's been at in college football. He's a better football coach than Ed Orgeron, Mark Stoops. He's obviously elevated the Florida program to a position where they can actually go to SEC championships. He's elevated the Florida program to a position where they were not at under McElwain. They're obviously competing at a much higher level than they were before. So I think that is a point in Mullen's corner. Not only that, I don't think you see Orgeron succeeding at Mississippi State. Mark Stoops, I think, could succeed at Mississippi State, but it very well could be a much more difficult place to succeed at Mississippi State than it is at Kentucky, considering Mississippi State is in the SEC West and Kentucky is in the SEC East. So the competition around you inside your respective division, it's much harder for Mississippi State to get to bowl games than it is for Kentucky to get to bowl games. So I've got Dan Mullen evaluated as a higher class of head coach, obviously, than Orgeron and Mark Stoops. I don't feel like I really had to go into great detail there to defend that take. I think most people would agree that Mullen is a better coach football-wise than those guys. And a heavy influence on my list here was, you know, football success. Football did seem to weigh a little bit heavier in my mind, possibly. But also, Mike White really isn't that much worse of a basketball coach than Will Wade or John Calipari. And I mean, John Calipari is the best basketball coach of those three that I just named. I feel like John Calipari, with the talent he brings in every year in recruiting, underachieves on a consistent basis at Kentucky. But I do understand how hard it is to win a national championship in basketball. Will Wade, does he really perform that much better on average than Mike White does at Florida? They both go to tournaments. They both typically win a game or two in the NCAA tournament. Mike White, was he coached there when they went to the Final Four?
Not the Final Four, just an Elite Eight run.
Was that really Donovan's last year?
I believe it was. I might be mistaken. I looked at White's coaching record at Florida so far this season earlier, and his first year, I believe he had an NIT appearance, and then the next year he went to the Elite Eight.
Maybe I'm just misremembering it, thinking Florida went to the Elite Eight that year or something like that, or not the Elite Eight, the Final Four that year. Yeah, that is right. Okay, my bad. I thought they went to the Final Four that year for some reason. That was the year South Carolina went to the Final Four, or was the year after that South Carolina went to the Final Four?
It was the year that South Carolina went to the Final Four. Florida and South Carolina actually played each other. South Carolina had just beaten Duke.
Oh, yes.
It was a fantastic – that may be one of my favorite tournaments.
So Elite Eight that year for Florida. So I mean, you even look at Mike White here over the last 5 seasons. Florida's an NCAA tournament team last year, probably, if the tournament doesn't get canceled. He would have gone to 5 straight tournaments and won a game, and he's won a game in every single tournament he's played in, at least, and then you've also got the Elite Eight appearance. So I do not think that Mike White's that much further below Will Wade at LSU, and then I think Dan Mullen's a significantly better head coach than Ed Orgeron is at LSU, so that's a big reason why I got Florida at 3.
I'm not mad at that. I do.
I mean, you had Florida at 4 ahead of LSU at 5. So who's your 3? You got Kentucky this high?
I actually have Pearl and Harsin at number 3, and I've got Kentucky higher on this list. The reason I have Pearl and Harsin at number 3 is Pearl. We've seen what he's been able to do at both Auburn and Tennessee, both 2 SEC schools.
Bruce Pearl is the best coach on this list.
By far. Best basketball coach by far on this list. The only reason...
I might say outside of Nick Saban, he's the best overall coach on this list.
I agree with that. That
would be a fun list to do.
That would be like...
Ranking best coaches, period, regardless of sport, in the SEC.
I'd love to do that.
I think we'd have to limit that, though, to football, basketball, baseball.
Yeah, I agree. But as far as Harsin goes, you know, he won 70 games at Boise State. Obviously, a talented coach. I just haven't seen him do it at the Power 5 level yet, and I've not seen him coach at Auburn yet or an SEC school yet. So I'm concerned.
How high you have Kentucky?
I have them at number 2.
Because we're gonna break this list open right here. Because I got Auburn at 2, and we're gonna fight this because that's where we've got the difference here. So better football coach, you think Harsin or Stoops?
I think Harsin has better potential.
Come on, man. You know Harsin's a better head coach than Stoops, or else you're expecting Auburn football to fail under Brian Harsin.
Well, I don't know what to expect from this team this year, but I will say that based on Harsin's track record so far, I think Harsin is the better football coach. Now, whether or not he can perform at the Power 5 level is yet to be seen. That's why I'm cautious.
Bruce Pearl or Calipari? Come on, man. There's a right answer there, too. Because we just said it, Bruce Pearl's the best basketball coach on this list.
It's Bruce Pearl, but Kentucky and Calipari...
Separate that, though. It's different. We're talking about coaches here, not the team.
Yeah. I guess you're right. Pearl is the better basketball coach.
Imagine, and I don't want to think about this, but imagine Bruce Pearl coaching the recruits that Kentucky has.
Be a much more talented team. They win more games.
They would not have done what they did this year.
No, I don't think. They would have actually played offense. That's what they would have done.
Bruce Pearl has built the Auburn program from nothing. Nothing. And he has now found a way to be able to out-recruit Kentucky for some guys. Guys like Jabari Smith want to come to Auburn now because of Bruce Pearl. When you're talking about team builders on this list, outside of Nick Saban, Bruce Pearl is the best team builder on this list of coaches, basketball or football. I weigh so heavily what Bruce Pearl has done at Auburn because it was Auburn basketball that he built up. I mean, Auburn basketball was the worst basketball program in the SEC outside of maybe South Carolina at the time that he got there. And both him and Frank Martin arrived in the SEC about the same time, and you've seen both of them climb. And look at what Bruce Pearl has done at Auburn in comparison to what Frank Martin has done at South Carolina in the same amount of time. And Bruce Pearl took Auburn to a Final Four. Back in the past, I used to think to myself, will Auburn ever win a national championship in basketball? I was like, nah. I don't know if Auburn will ever go to a Final Four in my lifetime. And then guess what? It happened. And so for me, with Bruce Pearl, he weighed so heavily on this list that I had to have him up there at 2. He's 2 on my list. And then I got Brian Harsin up there because, look, I know we haven't seen Brian Harsin in the Power 5, but if we're expecting Auburn to be any kind of successful with Brian Harsin, you have to admit he's a better football coach than Stoops is at Kentucky. So I'm hoping I've gotten you to change your list here and possibly move Kentucky down a notch.
So I'll do this.
And also, another thing for Bruce Pearl here that I just want to point out, he has owned Kentucky over the last couple of years.
Oh, for sure. Absolutely.
So, and he's done it with worse talent as far as recruiting rankings are concerned.
I'll say this. If Auburn, not necessarily overachieves, but essentially if they overachieve with Brian Harsin, and what I consider overachieving is...
9-10 wins.
I was going to say 7-8 wins. I think
that's overachieving
this
year?
Well, in year one, after a year where you went, what, 5-6?
Yeah, but Auburn's not gonna lose that many SEC games.
I don't know.
You go 7-5, you went like 3-5 in the SEC, man. Especially if you went 4-0 in non-conference play. You went 3-5 in the SEC. That's not going to happen.
Okay, so 8 wins or higher. If they get eight or more wins, I will put Brian Harsin and Pearl over Calipari and Stoops.
I think you should just go ahead and rank him ahead of him now. But
I haven't seen. What if Auburn goes 3-9 this year?
That's not happening. You know that's not happening.
I don't know. I think
don't put that evil on me, Ricky Bobby. Not doing that. That's twice in one show that you've gotten hit with that. I need to make a hotkey of that. Whenever somebody says something just terrible, I'm just gonna play it and say, "Don't put that evil on me, Ricky Bobby." So at two, I've got Auburn. At two, you've got Kentucky. We both have Alabama at the top of our list right now.
Yes.
Is that premature to put? Well, obviously Nick Saban is the best coach on this list, and that weighs so heavily that probably puts you up there. And Nate Oates is I think he's proven, even not just at Alabama, he did this at Buffalo too, but now when he went to Alabama, everybody's like, well, is he going to do it at Alabama? Is he going to do it at the Power 5 level? Look, he's done it.
He's done it. He's a very, very talented basketball coach. He's got this team to play selfless basketball. And I think this he's a very, very talented coach. And you don't even need to say anything about Nick Saban. We all know the accolades that Saban has. Definitely the best duo in the SEC, I think, by far. If Harsin had just come off if he has like an 11-win season this year, I may consider debating whether or not I put Auburn at the top over Saban and Oates, simply because I feel like it'd be more of an even-keeled matchup. But Alabama at one for sure.
Another fun discussion that I think we'll save for another day, considering we're running out of time on this segment. You're going to have to go to break soon. Which state among the 50 great states of the United States of America, which one is the pinnacle of collegiate athletics?
Well, I think the three that come to mind for me immediately, or the five rather, is California, Texas, Alabama, Georgia, and Florida. And the reason I put Alabama in there is because they have the highest win percentage out of the 50 states over the past, like, five seasons, I want to say.
And sure, a lot of that has to do with Alabama, whatever. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, whatever.
Whatever, yeah. But still, football and basketball, you look at the last 4 years, you talk about how Auburn's performed in basketball, and now Alabama's reaching that level. Alabama's been to two tournaments now in the past 4 years. Talk about the way that they're recruiting. We very well could be heading into a collision course. Baseball's up for Alabama as well. Auburn's been doing fine. I mean, you talk about pinnacle for consistency of success at the highest level in collegiate athletics. Alabama has to be there. I don't know how you put California out there. You know why you put California out there? Because it's large and it's got a lot of schools. What have they won? What have they won recently?
Yeah, the Pac-12.
Seven
really
games?
Done a whole lot. Seven games.
They won seven. I mean, let's be real.
And whenever you pair the Pac-12 up with the SEC, they're not really doing a whole lot. You saw Auburn back-to-back years, Washington and Oregon. Couldn't get past a 7-5 Auburn team.
What is the state of Florida won? A fake national championship?
Yeesh. I mean, they did win a national title in 2013. I mean, that was a very talented Florida State team.
That's a good point. But look at Florida State now.
In shambles. I love it. Got a point.
Florida's up again, but they were having some up and down years under McElwain, and then before that, and then you also talk about Miami is not Miami of old.
No.
Florida State's definitely not Florida State of tradition. UCF, when UCF is one of your best programs in that state, you're hurting.
It's bad.
Hurting.
Outside of Alabama, real quick, who else do you think could possibly even compete with the state of Alabama right now?
And the pinnacle of collegiate athletics, like, you know, states that have multiple schools, that are consistently good at multiple sports, I'm really having a hard time. Texas is obviously, they but then again, like, what Texas school overachieves in, like, multiple sports?
Well, let's go over them. Texas A&M doesn't really overachieve. Baylor, I would say
excellent in basketball.
Excellent in basketball outside of last year. For football, you know, they were doing pretty decent. But then Rule left for Carolina. So they're not really overachieving there.
But Texas has so many schools, like, I think you're bound to hit, right? Like, so I think Texas should be considered. You're bound to hit. And they're good. All of them are good at baseball too. So I think you're bound to hit there with Texas. Texas should be included. Fine. I'll give you that.
The Longhorns, I think, consistently underachieve in both basketball and football. I mean, and I'll
put Florida in the equation because of their basketball and baseball schools.
I think for Texas, though, I probably would have changed that narrative a little bit when we saw what Albine Christian did to them in the opening round. I hate you, Texas, for ruining my bracket.
Did you just say Albine Christian?
I don't know how to pronounce anything, man. You know this.
Abilene Christian.
Abilene, man.
I think that's how it is.
You're probably right.
I know it's spelled that way, but I don't know if that's exactly how it's pronounced. And then Georgia's only got one team. And it's Georgia, and they consistently underachieve as well. And they're not very good in basketball. They're not very good. They're okay in baseball, but 1-2 right now in the SEC standings after dropping to Tennessee. Football, they're excellent every year, but they still, you know, haven't gotten the big one yet. So I think Alabama definitely has to be in the equation right now for states that are the pinnacle of collegiate athletics right now.
I was going to do a Georgia Tech bit for Levi, but I don't know if I have it in me.
They even blew it. They have the best basketball team in quite some time. It can't win a tournament game.
Gracious. Come on, Loyola. Why are you doing this to me?
We wrap up the show on the other side of this break. You're listening to On the Line. Wrapping up On the Line here, Noah Gardner, Lance Dahl with you on ESPN 106.7 and on Fox Sports Central Alabama. It's been a good show today. If you missed any of it, go and find the podcast wherever you get your podcasts. We are about 5 minutes away from the drive, or from us getting out of here, and about 9 minutes away from the drive with Bill Cameron coming up at 4 p.m. till 6 p.m. on ESPN 106.7 and on Fox Sports Central Alabama. Before we wrap up the show here, let's take a listen to what's on TV tonight. Hey, everybody, it's Noah Gardner with What's On Tonight. At 8 on ABC tonight, there is a new episode of Grey's Anatomy. On NBC starting at 7, there are two new episodes of Superstorm. Some movie selections for tonight, genetically engineered dinosaurs. What could go wrong? Jurassic Park is on AMC at 7. Dumb and Dumber is on CMT at 7. Over on Freeform, you can find Shrek on at 8. A pair of Indiana Jones movies are on, Raiders of the Lost Ark at 6, and The Temple of Doom at 8, both on Paramount. In live sports, college basketball has 4 games. Games happening in the quarterfinal round of the NIT. 4-seed Mississippi State will play 2-seed Richmond at 5 on ESPN2. At 6 on ESPN, catch 3-seed NC State against 1-seed Colorado State. At 8 on ESPN, 2-seed Boise State and 1-seed Memphis. And rounding out the night at 9 on ESPN2, 4-seed Louisiana Tech and 3-seed Western Kentucky. In the NBA, there are 2 games on TNT. The Trailblazers and the Heat play at 6:30, and the 76ers and the Lakers close out the action at 9. I'm Noah Gardner, and that's what's on TV tonight. Steering our conversation now towards college basketball, we're not going to talk about the not-in tournament, the NIT. We're going to talk about the NCAA tournament here. Sweet 16 action coming up on Saturday. Didn't really get to talk about this a whole lot yesterday with Levi. Lance, I want to get your thoughts here. Who is the team you are most confident will advance this weekend to the Elite Eight?
If you look anywhere besides Gonzaga.
What are you doing?
And I understand that, like, well, you could also look to Baylor, because I definitely think that they have some...
Villanova's playing really, really well right now.
Exactly.
If Baylor's not on their best game, if they're, like, first 12 minutes against Hartford style of Baylor, Villanova wins this game.
I've seen this Baylor team struggle with Kansas State. I watched the whole game, and I sat there, I'm like, I can't pick this team to go to the national title game. It's like...
Everybody's had those games.
And Villanova, like you mentioned, without Colin Gillespie, they're playing really well right now. If they can continue this streak, I definitely see Baylor. I can see this getting really, really, really tight in the second half, and I don't know where I would go if I had to pick a team with like 2 or 3 minutes left.
Maybe it was an irrelevant question. Gonzaga is my selection as well. Mainly, a lot of it has to do with Creighton. Like, I'm not so sold that this Gonzaga team late. You know, like who has Gonzaga played right now? And they struggled with Oklahoma for a little bit. Oklahoma was in that ball game for a half, even a little bit into the second half. So this Gonzaga team, it's been a while since they've played good competition or really good competition. And Creighton can score the basketball now. If they're hitting down, if they're hitting their shots from beyond the arc, this Creighton team becomes dangerous. The problem is I don't think they do that against Gonzaga. I think Gonzaga really matches up well with them. And Gonzaga should big boy them in the post. They should bully them down low. And Gonzaga should have no problem whatsoever scoring the basketball against this Creighton team. I think it's a heinous matchup for the Jays. Give me Gonzaga as well. I think that one's probably the one that I'm most confident in. Game that you're least confident.
I think definitely for me, it's got to be Michigan against Florida State.
Interesting.
I'm really concerned with this Michigan basketball team matching up with Florida State. Levi and I actually talked about this for a little bit. I feel like FSU is the Walmart brand of Alabama. I feel like they're very, very similar in that they're big, they run the floor well, and they shoot a lot of threes, and they play good defense. I don't know how well this Michigan team matches up with them, especially without Livers on the floor. So I can see Florida State taking this one, even though Michigan should be the team that's favored to win.
Indeed, clashing styles in Florida State's size, athleticism, and ability to run the floor can take a half-court team like Michigan out of their comfort zone. When I was evaluating this bracket weeks ago or a couple weeks ago when we were headed towards the tournament saying what teams can win it all, Michigan was on my list, but I said the thing that will hold them back is their pace of play if they run into a team that can get them out of that and make them uncomfortable. Florida State definitely fits into that. I'm not going to say that they are the one that I'm least confident in, though. I'm going to say that the one that I'm least confident in is 6-seed USC advancing. Some people would be like, oh, well, that's a 6-7. It's like, that Oregon team is spraying it, man. That Oregon team is sneaky. If you're talking about, if you want to look into a portion of this bracket, we're like, oh, one, like if you're looking for two teams out of that bracket that could take down Gonzaga, you got them right there. Those two teams.
It's a shame that they're playing each other, that they don't get to both play Gonzaga individually just to kind of see how they match up with them.
Sure, and if Oregon can, because I think they can score enough to take the game late and at least be in it late with Gonzaga. I think they can score enough to get there. They've proven that. They outscored Iowa. That's hard to do.
It's very hard.
That's hard to do. And then again, Iowa's like, well, you haven't seen our defense, right? But then you got USC, a little bit different. They can score the basketball pretty well, but it's predicated on Evan Mobley up front at 7'1". So they've actually got a big that can compete with Gonzaga's bigs. It'll all be good fun. It'll be a good tournament weekend. That does it for another edition of On the Line. We'll be back tomorrow with our Friday edition. Working for the weekend, you got The Drive with Bill Cameron coming up after us. We'll see you tomorrow. You know where to find us.